This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is on loan to us as the producer from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Flames game in Calgary, our good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson, is going to join us at 7 p.m. tonight. From the Globe and Mail in Vancouver, David Ebner is going to join us. Wrote a great article today about some of the sports science methods that the NHL teams, certain NHL teams, including your Winnipeg Jets, are using to better track players' stamina, their performance, their endurance, and their risk of injury. We'll talk to David about that in 1 hour's time. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Richard, Ezra, good evening to both of you. Let's get started by talking about the big news that came down earlier this week. It was Sunday morning. I was all settled in for a relaxing Sunday, and that certainly did not happen when the news broke that the Winnipeg Jets dismissed Claude Noel as their head coach. At the same time, they hired Paul Maurice as their new head coach. First question, the timing of the move to remove Noel. Did you agree with the timing of the move? And secondly, you can address them at the same time if you like, your thoughts on Paul Maurice so far through one game and two practices as Winnipeg Jets head coach. And I won't hold that against you later on in the evaluation process.
You know, Drew, I was surprised, not shocked. I was surprised that he was let go and it wasn't at the end of the season, because I said before the season, and I'm not sure, I think a couple of us did, I said before the season that if the team didn't make the playoffs, I did not think that Claude Noel would be the coach of, you know, next season. I was surprised that he was let go before the season was over, for a number of reasons based on past precedent, although we should note that, you know, coaches that graduate to the National Hockey League is different than having the same coach in place all the time and having to make that decision and whether or not the message is stale. But having said that, I was surprised based on past precedent. I was surprised based on the fact that you can't really conduct a full search when you fire somebody midseason, because you can't speak to any of the assistant coaches out there, and even AHL head coaches. Well, it's happened before, I believe, with Kirk Muller. It's rare. For those reasons, I was surprised. Based on the play of the team, I wasn't surprised. The team was in a tailspin and has been kind of spinning its wheels for some time now. So I'll let Ezzy address the Noel thing first before I get into the Maurice thing. But overall, I thought Claude Noel basically got two seasons. Half the season, basically half last season was a half season, and the season before, which was a big adjustment. You know, you feel bad for the guy, and he didn't get the job done, and he wasn't given a ton of time. And, you know, I think the players probably ought to have respected him more than they did. And by not respecting him, I don't think they respected themselves. So I have an issue with a fair number of the guys on the squad and how those last few days and the last few games went down.
Right. And whenever you have a head coach that goes down like that, that 6-3 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets, it's terribly unfortunate, because fans were leaving, fans were booing, mm-hmm. and everybody left that game on a Saturday night on CBC National feeling extremely depressed and really quite befuddled as to where this team is going. And really, Kevin Cheveldayoff almost had to make that move. He obviously didn't have to make the move. He could have waited to address that in the off season, or really right after the regular season. But really, you know, you lose five games in a row and you can't really put together a consistent effort at home, and really that's what precipitated that move. And as far as Claude Noel goes, he has a lot to be proud of as far as what he's done with the team. I mean, this team was leading the division last year. You know, they did pretty well last year, and there were parts of this year where the Jets looked like they were going to turn it around. I look at that road trip, guys, that six-game road trip where they went out the Eastern U.S. and they picked up a lot of points there. They probably could have even came home with five of six wins and they came back with 4 of 6 wins. And that was, to me, kind of the part of the season where I was the most optimistic about the Jets kind of righting the ship. But when you look at the 5 losses in a row and kind of the effort level there, and Richie mentioned the way the players were performing on the ice, really, we were kind of losing hope there. There wasn't a lot of hope. And Paul Maurice comes in, and all of a sudden we have this breath of fresh air, and the Jets get a win, and they get a commanding win against the Phoenix Coyotes. It's only one game. Let's see what they do over the next couple of weeks and see if they can maybe even pull off a miraculous run and get into the playoffs. But as far as Claude Noel goes, you can't, you know, take any type of joy, you know, to use one of Claude Noel's terms, in a coach being let go, because it's a really unfortunate situation that the Jets are this far out of a playoff spot. I shouldn't say no one thought that maybe the Jets would be in this position. I definitely thought they would have more wins at this point in the season, considering that the schedule was favorable. They made some off-season moves that I liked. But as far as Claude Noel goes and you know, Paul Maurice coming in, I really think it's an opportunity here to see the team go in a more positive direction. Because really, and Chevy said this in his press conference, really, the Jets started off the season 500, and they've really stayed there. And they haven't really made any major improvements. Sure, you've seen specific players, Drew, develop, and Mark Scheifele is one of those guys that started off, you know, struggling big time. But, you know, Claude Noel deserves some of the credit for the way he stuck with Mark Scheifele, and now he's looking like he's going to have a pretty good rookie season. So it's not all, you know, doom and gloom. He lost his job, but he has a lot to be proud of, I would say.
This isn't Ron Rolston being dismissed in Buffalo when he didn't really do anything aside from hold as a placekeeper there for about a year with no real tangible results at the end of it.
I mean, but his team is terrible too. I mean, you know, the coaches sometimes are only as good as their players, and I think there's players on this team that didn't respond to Claude Noel.
I agree with you.
And that is the issue, that was the issue, and it was the buy-in defensively. That was the end of the day why he doesn't have a job today. They wouldn't buy in defensively under him. They never did, for whatever reasons. They didn't, and that's why he's gone. It's nothing else. I mean, you know, sure, the goaltending was an issue. I think that ties in with buying in defensively, but it was an issue anyways. Still was, especially this year.
Yeah, part and parcel.
So, you know, it's these are the problems that he had, and those last few games, his leaders were going down there. They weren't all there.
Well, and I think we addressed that on Sunday during the coverage. Is we said, you know, it's one thing if your best players are still performing, you know, to the best of their abilities, and you're losing because of the, you know, the lesser guys or the depth guys. The coach isn't going to get fired for that. But when your best players are your worst performers on the ice, like they were on Saturday, when Zach Bogosian and Toby Enstrom and Andrew Ladd and Brian Little are your worst players on the ice, that tells you that there's something rotten almost with the core, and something needed to change as a result of that performance. Now Paul Maurice is back in. Sort of a two-part question for you guys. Are you surprised at how quickly they named Paul Maurice the non-interim head coach to the end of the year?
I don't buy that, by the way.
Well, expand, because it's very bizarre. You know, you hire Paul Maurice, and you know, when the press release comes out, it doesn't say the word interim. And then Kevin Cheveldayoff has his press conference later that day, and he says, we have an agreement with him until the end of the season only, and then we can reevaluate it. So, you know, explain what you say, but you don't buy that.
Paul Maurice is a name. You know, he's not Scotty Bowman, but he's a name. I would be surprised if he's coming here for half of January. Basically, there's no February, basically. So half of January, March, and half of April for less than 3 months of play. I don't see that.
Basically 35 games.
I don't see that being an experiment. That's not enough time to, you know, you hire, it's like Carlisle in Toronto. You hire him at the end of the season to get an idea of what the roster is going into the offseason. And it appears that Cheveldayoff wants another set of eyes to see some of the players that he wasn't sure about under Noel. So I do not, they're not going to use him, quote unquote, for that purpose and then get rid of him. I see this being at least a 3-year deal at the end of the day.
You see this being a regular NHL coaching contract that maybe just doesn't have the ink dry on it yet because this unfolded so quickly. Ezzy, do you see it the same way?
Right, and maybe it's partially because you don't want to name someone head coach when you haven't done a full search, but I think Richie is right. You bring in Paul Maurice. If it was an assistant coach and you gave him the interim tag, maybe there's less of a chance that interim coach would become the head coach. But Paul Maurice has been in this situation. He's had two go-arounds with the Carolina Hurricanes. He's coached Toronto. He's coached for 1 year in the KHL. So it's not someone that you don't know what his abilities as a coach are. You know what his abilities are. He's taken the Carolina Hurricanes to the finals, and he's had varying degrees of success. He's had years where he hasn't gotten his team into the playoffs, but I do think that the as Richie mentioned, similar to other coaches who get three-year deals, Dallas Eakins, Edmonton Oilers, I believe he got four, but and some guys get five. It's rare that you're going to get a coach that's given a five-year contract. Even Eakins, Richie, you could say 4 years is a lot for someone who's never been an NHL coach. But yeah, you'd have to think that really this is his evaluation period, because sure, the Jets still could mathematically make the playoffs. It's going to be very, very difficult, and you're probably going to have to win around 70% of your games. But really, he has to be thinking, well, who are the players that I can build on, in addition to the core guys, because we know that the core players will be back next year unless there's a trade. But as far as the guys that are UFAs, RFAs, guys that are on two-way contracts, that's what he's trying to figure out right now. He's trying to look at the team and say, okay, who's playing my style of hockey? Because there is something to be said for certain players who don't fit into a system. That's just a given. There's players get traded because they're not players that fit into a certain coach's system. So, sure, we might be told that the interim tag is on Paul Maurice, but I'd have to believe that, barring anything unforeseen, that he'll be back come October.
It's said that he wants to play an aggressive man-to-man style in the defensive zone. Is that something that this team is built to do?
Probably not. I mean, a couple of these guys can skate well enough to do that. Can they stay disciplined enough defensively to do that? It's another question. Right now, a couple of the guys can't skate well enough. Like Party and Stewart can't skate well enough to do that, I don't think. So then you have your other guys, and can Ellerby think enough to do that? And, Enstrom Small. That's something that I'm interested to see if that happens. I know that's something that he'd like to employ, but we've also heard from his former players that he is flexible based upon the players he has on the roster.
That's, I think, an important feature for a coach to be.
I want to talk more about Maurice. Why don't we talk about it after George then?
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald is going to join us to talk about the Jets-Flames game tomorrow in Calgary, and then later on in the show we'll come back and we'll address Paul Maurice a little bit more. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
.615 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good evening. How are you?
Oh, we're getting by. We still haven't shoveled our streets, but I'm sure you guys have the same problem there.
Yeah, that was a bit of an issue over New Year's. We'll spare you that conversation. Yeah.
I'm trying to get Drew to shovel the front of my house. It's not working though, George.
You got more chance of Drew shoveling yours than the city shoveling mine. So that's all I got to say.
Well, it's good to see that we got the same things going on in Winnipeg as we do in Calgary.
No question.
And I bet you're especially pumped to see Olli Jokinen in action again tomorrow night.
Oh, he's always one of our favorites. Yep.
George, obviously the Jets and the Flames tomorrow at the Saddle Dome. Second meeting for this team, for these two teams this season. Earlier they played at the MTS Center. With the Flames, we've got to start with the ongoing general manager search. Obviously, Brian Burke pulled the trigger on that move, dismissing Jay Feaster earlier this year. What's happening with that search, and has it always been intended to be this long and sort of drawn out?
Well, he told us it would be, and, you know, as it continues to go on, I mean, Joe Nieuwendyk's name continues to surface. He's not answering my calls, which could or could not mean anything. and George McPhee's contract is up at the end of the year. There's names circulating around, but, you know, you keep kind of wondering whether Brian Burke is going to look at this when it's all kind of played out and say, you know what? The best guy for this job is Brian Burke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he continues to deny it. He continues to downplay it. He continues to dismiss it. And we continue to have it stuck in the back of our minds. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now. It doesn't seem to be any farther along than the day that Brian announced that Jay had been released, relinquished of his duties. So, you know, we're all kind of sitting here and wondering what's going to happen, and it could be a fairly momentous summer around here again.
You know, George, when I think about, like, you know, the Calgary situation, I don't know if it's as extreme as, say, Oakland in football, but, you know, the coaches are so worried about Al Davis and what he would do when he was in control. Is this a situation where it's going to be kind of a wild card GM candidate who comes up because the favorites, the ones who most people talk about, wouldn't be interested in working under Brian because of the power issue?
Well, and that's why I think you keep coming back to Brian himself, because, I mean, obviously the guy that, you know, Brian gets is going to be a Brian guy. You know, a lot of, you know, he might wind up being a guy, you know, where Brian is Edgar Bergen and the other guy's Charlie McCarthy, and he sits on Brian's lap and talks and Brian tells him to talk, right? I mean, we could get into this kind of a thing, but you get the feeling that that's why, with the field being as narrow as it is, you know, that it might wind up being Brian himself when all is said and done. He'll come to us in June and say, before the draft, and say, you know what, we beat the bushes, we talked to a lot of people, nothing came down, so until further notice, I'm the guy. That certainly isn't out of the realm of possibility. I don't think he's going to go get a guy that isn't going to look good in the position or isn't going to be his kind of guy, because that's just not the person Brian Burke is. I think then he would certainly take it on. And you know, as you said, I mean, he's a fairly forceful personality. So if you're going to work for him, you're going to have to come in knowing a few things, and you're going to have to, and that's why somebody that he's already worked with or somebody that knows him really well are, you know, some of the guys in the Leafs organization, in the minors and stuff like that, they know him and they know what they're getting into. And I think that's the kind of guy you're going to see. I don't think you'll see a wild card guy. I don't think you'll see it. I think it'll be a guy that Brian Burke thinks is a Brian Burke type guy.
You know, when you look at the coaches, and of course, you know, with the GM, usually they want to bring in their own coach. Bob Hartley seems to have done a pretty good job, at least, of having the ear of the room for the most part, even though there's a huge talent disparity between the Flames and many other teams. How would you say he's done this year in terms of a coaching job, and what do you see for him in the future?
Well, I mean, I think he's done a very good job. I mean, just the fact that he's kept them, you know, for the most part, this team has worked extremely hard. I mean, they have. And you're right, the talent discrepancy, you know, is vast on a lot of nights. And I think they caught a lot of people early. He gave them there was a really tough training camp. A lot of the guys here said, even the guys had come in from other places, that was the toughest camp I ever had. I think they caught a lot of people by surprise with their start. They worked really hard, but now we're in a very delicate situation for this team, because, you know, we're at a point now where they're kind of looking at it and going, holy Christmas. You know, most nights when we work really hard, it still doesn't matter.
Right.
And because, you know, when the other team's good players, you know, the other night, you know, Letang and Malkin ramped it up and Pittsburgh kind of squeezed by them, even with the subpar Sidney Crosby. Jamie Benn and Sagan come in and destroy them when Dallas is in here. When the other team's best players ramp it up, the Flames really have no answer other than hard work. And when you come to the realization that that isn't going to be good most nights,
right,
good enough most nights, that's when you got a problem. And that's where we are right now.
George, we got to ask you about Yuri Hudler. It's been over a week now since he found out that he wasn't going to be on the Czech Republic team. And I believe it was yesterday or the day before that he finally came out and made some comments and downplayed it a little bit. I imagine you are surprised, considering he's the top Czech Republic scorer in the NHL and leading the Flames. Do you think he's maybe, again, downplaying it a little bit, and he really is bothered by the fact that he didn't make the team?
I don't think there's any question. I mean, there was two or three days. The day that it all happened, he was storming around. There's no question about it. He wasn't talking to us. He doesn't talk to us a lot anyway, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, the fact that, you know, everybody that's near not as old as Vaclav Nedimansky seems to have made that team. You know, Peter Nedved.
Peter Nedved.
You know, I mean, holy Chris. And Roman Cervenka, who came here and was a total bust. Now, I know the Olympics, big ice, different game, but really?
Yeah.
And the fact that Hudler has played very well and pretty consistently, you know, on a bad team where he could have just chucked it in and said, you know what, this isn't working. Forget it. I'm packing up my tent and I'm taking my picnic utensils home. He hasn't done that yet. And the fact that he's still battling, I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, he thought he was going to be there and he wanted to be there. I mean, you know, he's not a very talky guy, but I think he's a proud guy and he's had an excellent year. And the fact that he's not on that team is just somewhat astounding.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by our good friend George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, previewing tomorrow night's Jets-Flames game.
George, we just talked about, you know, Yuri Hudler not making the Czech Republic team. I don't think this would be necessarily a huge oversight by Team Canada, but I think his name is maybe in consideration more than some people who are outside of Calgary would think, and that's Mark Giordano. Can you talk about, you know, his play this year and maybe considering, again, the lack of depth on the roster, how he's played pretty well thus far?
Well, he's, you know, I mean, he was the obvious choice for captain, and if it had been anybody else, we would have sent out for CAT scans because, I mean, he's just... You know, he's a real solid pro. That's what he is. He's not gonna dazzle you. He's just not gonna do that, but he's a really solid guy. The fact that he broke his ankle and he was out for quite a while, I think, obviously hurt his chances. And I mean, that's a pretty deep defense. I mean,
right, yeah.
And I think they were looking at him really hard. The fact that the Hockey Canada guys are here, the Hockey Canada per se, quote unquote, is here. I think they looked hard at him. The fact that Steve Yzerman called him, the day that the team was announced and said, look, you know what, you were on our radar, you're in the mix, you're still in the mix if somebody gets hurt, we value you very highly. I think that meant a lot to him, specifically because, you know, he doesn't get a lot of love outside this city. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people know his name, and the fact that he had suffered the broken, the broken ankle, broken foot, and missed a significant amount of time, the fact that he was still there, I think he was quite happy with that. And you know what? If he gets a chance, he certainly won't be out of place.
George, the Flames are obviously going to be sellers come the trade deadline. And you look at the roster, and there's a couple guys who are going to be UFAs after the season. The name that jumps out to me the most and probably to most fans would be Mike Camilleri. You know, what can the Flames expect, you know, or what can they ask for Mike Camilleri based on the season he's having so far? And the fact, I mean, right now he's out with a concussion, but assuming he's healthy by the trade deadline or, you know, when he's on the block.
Well, I don't know what I think he'll move. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think all year we've been kind of saying, well, you know, people were saying, well, you know, he'll come and the team's not going to be very good and Jerome's not here anymore and Tanguay's gone and he won't produce. Well, we all thought that he'd produce just because he wanted to move on and he wanted somebody better to want him. You know what I mean? So, he's been fitfully okay, started really good like a lot of the other veterans did. Stempniak did, Stajan did, and that's why they got off to a good start was those guys, along with Sean Monahan, the rookie, played really well off the start. But he's tapered off. He's got like 7 points or 8 points, I'm not sure now what it is now, since December 7th. And, if Mike Camilleri wants to go to a contender, if he wants them to look at him as the same guy that had that unbelievable run for the Montreal Canadiens, you know, 2 or 3 years back. He's going to have to ramp it up when he gets back, assuming he gets back soon from this concussion issue. Because I what can you get for him? I don't know. But, Brian Burke keeps saying, we're too small. You know, it's like we all live in the Shire here. You know, he was on and on the other day about, you know, our junior team, the Hitmen, are bigger than our NHL team, and this just isn't going to work. So you look at Camilleri, you look at Stempniak, you look at Stajan, you look at their smaller guys, and those are the guys, the veteran guys, that really haven't played well since, I don't know, mid-November, beginning of December. Those are the guys that you'll be seeing moving. And, what you can get for them, I'm not really sure at this point.
So I guess we'll see John Scott in a Flames jersey pretty soon, right?
Oh, you know, and yeah, I mean, there'll be Colton Orr. We keep waiting for Colton Orr to show up, and we're still not putting it out of the realm of possibility at some point here before April.
He's a good Winnipeg boy. As far
there
as
there you go, as he's got something going for him then.
as far as the goalies go, Kari Ramo and Rado Barra have basically split the number one goaltending mm-hmm. duties for Calgary. Joey McDonald's played mm-hmm. a little bit. As far as you're concerned, I guess two part question: do you know who's starting tomorrow? And the second part of that question: do you see either of those two goalies, or I guess three goalies, if you want to throw in Joey McDonald as well, coming back to Calgary next year, or do you think the plan is to address that in the off season or before the trade deadline?
Well, I don't think you'll see it addressed before the trade deadline, but because nobody's going to give up a goalie of note, you know, mm-hmm. but a deadline, I don't think. That's a good question, and I really can't answer it in terms of will these be the guys next year. If Jay Feaster was here, I'd say yeah, because, you know, he knows Ramo from Tampa Bay. Bob Hartley knows Rado Barra from the Swiss League, and that's why those two guys were here. But with Brian Burke taking over, you know, every equation in this organization changes. Have they been good? They've been okay. Are they Mika Kiprusov? Not in your life. And, you know, not a lot of people are or were over Kiprusov's 10 years here. Tomorrow, I'm guessing we're back to Barra because Ramo gave up four last night in Nashville. And that's just kind of the way that Bob has worked it. You know, it's tough to grade them. They seem to give up a soft goal, one soft goal a night, and against a team that scores as little as this does, that's like, you know, sinking the boat pretty quick. But, you know, it's tough to judge them because they don't get a lot of offensive support. And, you know, they're new at this. I mean, there's no getting around this. This isn't the Swiss League. This isn't the KHL. You know, this is Sid and Taves and Malkin and these guys, and it's a whole different ball game. So that's a good question, though. We'll have to wait for the summer, I think, to see whether the goaltending is shaken up at all. They have that one guy, the U.S. Olympic junior guy, and they're really high on him. And I wouldn't be surprised that, if we see him making an appearance, next year, at least being given a real good shot.
Final question, George. You know, a lot of teams are fan-based clamor for a rebuilding process. They want to get a high pick and a couple high picks,
mm-hmm.
and they want to make sure, you know, the team quote-unquote tanks. Can you talk about maybe the fans, how they've reacted to the team thus far? Because it's a lot easier, you know, in theory than it is in practice, and it's a lot more expensive when you're a fan paying for these tickets every night when the team doesn't have a great chance of winning.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question, and I really think that we won't find out about that until next year, because last year, everybody, you know, we've been telling them they have to rebuild. We have to rebuild. They've had that drilled into their heads. And so they said, okay, we're in for the rebuild. You know, good on you guys. You're finally doing it, and all this kind of stuff. And then, as you say, the reality hits you, and your team doesn't win very often. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stinky nights, and there's a lot of problems, and there's a lot of turmoil and all that kind of stuff. So how on board are the season ticket holders of the Calgary Flames? I think we have a better chance of finding out next year when they've had a year to sort of soak this all in than we did this year when everybody just kind of went, yeah, that's great, they're going to get younger. Yeah, well, it's going to hurt.
Right, yeah.
And it has hurt, and we'll see how much hurt they're going to take back from their wallets next year. But, you know, I think as long as the team played really, really hard the first two or three months, I think everybody was on board with it. Mm-hmm. But as I say, we're in a very delicate situation right now. They won 2 in their last 10. What is it, 3 in their last 13 or something like that, where, you know, they have to get something mm-hmm. to make everybody excited again, or at least to give them some hope.
George Johnson is a columnist with the Calgary Herald. He covers the Calgary Flames as well. George, thanks very much for doing this. Enjoy tonight's Top Prospects game.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk soon, George. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, always one of our best and favorite guests on the show. Covers the Flames, does a fantastic job, and of course was in Winnipeg for many years before he headed out to Calgary, so he's quite familiar with this fair city of ours. You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Richie, Ezzy, before the George interview, we were talking about Paul Maurice and his coaching style, and you know, sort of what we thought he brings to the Winnipeg Jets organization. You know, we were talking about the style that he tries to employ, or he usually prefers to employ in his own zone, which is a man-to-man style, and I had asked you if you thought that could work for the Jets, Richard, and you had some concerns about foot speed on certain people, but you wanted to expand on your thoughts and the style and everything else, so... You
know. Well, I think he comes in here, Drew, and if you win early... I was talking about this on the Big Show this morning. If you win early, people will listen. I think he's trying to take advantage of that. He's already trying to set a narrative, right?
Sure.
The too much attention on Byfuglien. We need to do this. We need to do that, and a bunch of things. And the players, because when you come into a losing, this is why there's always generally a boost of performance after a coach is fired. Because when you're losing, you stop listening, or you don't listen as much, or whatever you're hearing isn't, you know, is only setting in a little bit. And when when a change is made, you're willing to open up and see if this guy can help you win. And if he does help you win, you're buying whatever he's selling. So to get on it early is important. And I think he's trying to do that. Now, Paul Maurice has had teams kind of similar to the Jets. A little bit more, I think, offensively or like more forward-driven. The Canes never really had, a great 1-6 defense. And even Toronto, obviously, that team was a pretty average squad. He's had, for the most part, you know, you probably think on paper average squads. Of course, he led the Canes to the Stanley Cup final in 2002. If you remember, actually, it was a Nicholas Wahlin goal in Montreal in Game 3. He could have been swept in the first round, but he got that team going. I believe it was Artur Zerbe and those guys there. So he's done, I think, a lot many times with not much. But also, there's been seasons where he hasn't done much with not much. I'm interested to see what he does defense-wise here, because a lot of talent on the back end that seems to have not maybe... I think Trouba has certainly taken great steps based on the fact he was drafted a year and a half ago. But guys like Bogosian, and obviously where Byfuglien plays, and even Enstrom, you know, you could say have not played as strong defensively, or not playing up to their potential. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But he is a very true North-type coach. And by that, I mean, he's going to come, he's going to work hard, he's not going to get too much attention, he's not going to say much to the media that they can use, you know, against him or the players. You know what you're getting. I mean, so all that stuff is to me, fairly predictable. I actually thought it was very interesting.
Would safe be a good word to use?
Yeah, safe. You know, it doesn't mean there's not potential to exceed. I think that they like that possibility of exceeding expectations, but it is a safer choice. Because if you go and hire somebody who hasn't been a coach, as you're an assistant, you're not sure what you're getting, then there's more risk involved. And sometimes more reward, sometimes not. Kevin Sheveldayoff said that he got a hold of Paul Maurice on Tuesday after the Tampa game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that seems like, you know, okay, I get that, you know, 5-day turnaround or so. I was watching I was watching the Leafs game. Leafs against, I forget who they were playing on Sunday night.
Devils,
yeah, terrible game. And Harry Neal,
good football, on, you know.
Yeah, Harry Neal and Joe Bowen and Greg Millen were doing the call, and they were, I guess, talking about one of the players who came back into the league, whatever it was, and they mentioned Paul Maurice, and they said that Paul Maurice is back in the league, because this happened in the morning, and they mentioned to Harry Neal, like, you know, you knew about that. I don't know if they're friends or not. He said, yeah, I known about it for 2 weeks. So I don't know if it's going on longer than Tuesday, but I thought that was interesting. Maybe he was joking. I don't know. So don't shoot the messenger. Take it for what it's worth. It might not be worth much, but I thought that was an interesting comment.
Sure. It might be an interesting clip to pull up at least and hear that. But that is interesting. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I think that there's probably back channel methods. I mean, did Kevin Sheveldayoff and Paul Maurice speak for the first time on last Tuesday? I believe that to be true. Can you go different ways without having general managers speak to potential head coach? Certainly, you can have. There's other ways to get your message across that you might be interested. But you know, as your thoughts on the Maurice hiring and the systems he's going to implement, and you know, or is this a good hire in your opinion?
I think it's a good hire as far as the systems go. It's unbelievable how much we've talked about systems.
Well, because it's...
It's too much. But yeah. Anyways, as far as the systems...
Well, hang on. Maybe I was wrong when I used the word systems there. Do you expect the Jets are going to be better defensively under Paul Maurice than they were at Claude Noel? I could care less what system
it's hard
they,
to be worse.
Well, I could care less what system they use, but... I
it's
mean,
hard
you,
to be worse. The system wasn't the issue with Claude Noel as much as the buy-in to playing defensively.
Right. Do you think
they
buy in?
And we've talked a lot about this on the show, and we've had disagreements as far as... you know, the defensemen and the pairings and all that. But, you know, just to talk about the systems and then maybe specifically the defensive system, because this team can score goals, guys. We've seen a lot of players on this team scoring goals, and there's players that haven't been performing at the level that was expected out of them. But as far as the system goes, I think, you know, Paul Maurice is coming in, and you can't just instill a system in one game or two games or three games, Richie. I think he even said himself, he said to the guys before the game against Phoenix to continue playing the system that they had been playing the whole year. And I think you guys would all agree that when you're talking about you know, the system in hockey, you know, it's not something that you can really, it's not a revolutionary thing that
That's
you can
right.
just bring in and then all of a sudden you're going to fix everything. Richie mentioned, you know, buying into the defensive system. We've seen the Jets play.
Defensive mindset, as he does.
We've seen the Jets play well defensively before, many times. This year, I think, at times more than others, but we've also seen them play very poor defensively. So that's kind of, you know, we heard Claude Noel talk about inconsistency so much, and to me, one of Claude Noel's biggest downfalls, there was a couple. When you only last as a coach for 2.5 years, something went wrong. And sure, the players have to take some of the blame. The management has to take some of the blame. That's why it's kind of divided between those three areas of running a pro sports team. And when you talk about the Jets, you know, they have a lot of talent on this team on the back end, in goal, and when things aren't going well, it's easy to pick apart individuals. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, Paul Maurice coming in here, I think that he's going to look at some of the players and he's going to say, okay, well, these are the guys that really are not buying into this system. And again, you know, you talk about man-to-man or whether it's
whatever,
you know, zone and all that. I mean, the reality is, they have to play better, and that's not just the defenseman, and that's why, you know, I look at you know, good teams, and it's not just the defenseman, it's the forwards. You watch a team like Boston, you have defensively, responsible forwards. Okay. So it has to be a team concept. It cannot just be, oh, well, you know, Byfuglien's got to play better defensively. If Byfuglien is a forward for the rest of the season and even going into next year, he's also going to have to buy into that. And a team like the Jets, we've seen them play run and gun against the really good teams in the NHL, whether it's the Blackhawks or the Penguins, and they just don't have enough talent to do that. So they're going to have to buy in if they want to have success in the league. So I imagine over the next 2.5 months, Paul Maurice is going to change the way the Jets play to a certain degree. But I don't know if he's coming in and completely revolutionizing, you know, the way the Jets play hockey. I think he's going to see certain things. He's going to see habits. And he's even come in here and said, this team has a lot of speed. That's one of the things that I was most surprised about.
Everybody knows that.
We've got size. And so, I mean, that's something that the Jets need to use better. And they've done it before. And again, I look at the Jets and, you know, the argument is, well, the Jets just aren't good enough and this and that. Well, I really think that they can be better than their record indicates. And I know that there's this...
Let me get in there, because they absolutely can be better than their record indicates. The question is, can it be better than those playoff teams in their division? That's the question.
Right.
But I do agree with you. I mean, I think we all agree this team can be better than they've been playing.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Right? And again, that whole, can the team be better than their record indicates? Well, no. I mean, Paul Maurice said that. I believe that it's not a direct quote, but he said, you are what your record is. You're not better than what your record is. If you were better, your record would be better. But I think, you know, there is something to be said about sometimes the passion level that these guys have and the effort that they put in. Anybody who's watched the Jets on a regular basis can see that this team can turn it on and turn it off, and that's not a good thing. So back to Paul Maurice, I think the thing that I like about Paul Maurice the most probably is that I think he can be a better motivator than Claude Noel. I think he's a better communicator, and you know, Claude Noel took some flack sometimes for maybe not being as animated on the bench, but that's his style. He's got a unique style. Every coach has their own style. Ken Hitchcock is also a guy, Richie, that can brood on the bench, and at times then he motivates. So, I mean, there's different styles, but I think Paul Maurice, this group does need a kick in the butt at practice, in-game, and I think maybe Paul Maurice has, because of his experience at the NHL level, he's been in the playoffs, he maybe has more ability to motivate certain types of players. Not that Claude Noel couldn't motivate players, but I'm saying Paul Maurice might be able to do it in a different, more effective way.
And you're always better able to motivate early on in your tenure. And you don't give them too much rope, because if you do, they're going to take it. Mm-hmm. And especially this squad, which lacks leadership, as far as I'm concerned. When you look at the Jets and you look at Paul Maurice, people are saying, oh, look at Maurice coaching on the bench. And Noel never did that. Well, he literally coaching on the bench because he hadn't seen the team for 4 hours. I mean, I don't think people are going to pile on Noel if the team wins. And if they lose, you know, the players are going to be responsible. The players know that too. But he's put in place to play a Phoenix team that's been playing very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
We should note that. Phoenix came in here not playing well. They lost again last night.
Yeah, they played better but lost again.
I was watching some of that game, and they're definitely playing better, but it wasn't they're not playing well. They're going into Calgary tomorrow, and Calgary is an awful team. Their team is just terrible.
The Jets are going into Calgary tomorrow.
Yeah?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. It sounded like you said Phoenix was going in there, so I was just clarifying.
Sorry,
that.
The Jets are going into Calgary tomorrow, and then they play Edmonton at home on Saturday, mm-hmm. on the afternoon. Another awful team. Another team that lost again yesterday. So you're putting Maurice in a position where if he can get it, if the guys can buy in early, he'll get 3 wins, and then they can go out to their tougher games, and they can have a little bit of a foundation to build on. And that's one of the things I think when Cheval Dayoff was deciding to fire Noel. Obviously, the losing streak was a big factor,
sure,
but it was also a factor that he didn't fire him after the Edmonton game. He wanted to see if he could get some wins before they go to Edmonton.
You have a soft schedule coming up, so it's a good opportunity to make the change. You got the coach off to a good start.
Doesn't hurt. I mean, especially this part of the season, there's only so much more time you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the goaltending moves that the Edmonton Oilers made earlier today. Of course, we'll see the Oilers on Saturday here at MTS Center. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show will get underway at 7 a.m. bright and early Saturday morning here on TSN.
So I guess you're buying the coffee again, right?
I'll buy the coffee. Yeah, don't worry.
I should. You bought the coffee last time. I should buy the coffee this time.
I just want you to wake up.
Okay.
Will you wake up? I'll buy the coffee. How's that for a fair trade?
Yeah, I'm offering, though.
Okay, fair enough. I'll keep it under. I'll take it under advisement. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Coming up at the top of the hour, David Ebner from the Globe and Mail in Vancouver is going to join us to talk about his latest article. It's a sports science related article. We'll tweet it out on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Oilers, goaltending problems, much like the Winnipeg Jets. They've had goaltending problems for the last number of years. It's been Devan Dubnyk is the guy that they wanted to be the number one goaltender. They signed him to a decent-sized contract to be the number one goaltender, and that didn't work. And then they went out and they got Ilya Bryzgalov, and he's been playing a lot lately. And then earlier today...
Yeah, that doesn't work either.
Yeah, that didn't work either.
Neither does their awful defense.
Yeah, that might be part of the problem more so than anything else. Earlier today, the Devan Dubnyk in Edmonton era came to an end as he was traded from the Oilers to the Nashville Predators in exchange for left winger Matt Hendricks, who the Predators had signed to a free agent contract earlier this summer. Obviously, things didn't work out in Nashville for Matt Hendricks, and they're going to take a flyer and see if Devan Dubnyk can be a short-term answer to some of their goaltending problems. As they've been without Pekka Rinne for a number of months now.
They ate some contract on that too, Edmonton.
Yes, Edmonton is paying half of the Dubnyk's contract for the rest of the year.
So, I mean, we'll talk about the other move. Also, obviously, Edmonton makes a corresponding move, but Devan Dubnyk in Edmonton just, you know, he had that short span of good performance, but overall never got the job done. I've never been his biggest fan. Sure, the defense is an issue there, and it has been for some time, but he also hasn't got the job done. And Edmonton's decided to move on. It's a risky situation when you give up on a big young goaltender. He's not that young anymore, but a big goaltender who's still fairly young. And there certainly is a possibility that he turns it around elsewhere, but also sometimes you wouldn't turn it around in that place. And they counted on him for a long time, a lot of expectations, and it just never got done. So I don't mind Edmonton finally cutting the cord on that move. I thought it was interesting that they had to eat cash on the deal. Because Nashville is 23rd in the NHL in terms of cap cap space, so meaning they have more than a lot of the other teams.
Sure.
And the other issue is Matt Hendricks. And Matt Hendricks comes, and a guy who played center before was playing primarily wing this year. A good skater for a physical guy. He can get in on the forecheck, and Edmonton obviously likes good skating, Ezzy, and he can hit, and he can play center, and that may be where they throw him. But Nashville soured pretty quickly on that deal, and I realize that they signed kind of a lot of guys like him, like Eric Nystrom, I think, is better than him. So you have a guy like Nystrom, and you sign a guy like Stallberg, speedy guys. We talked about the fact that they want to get faster, but and they assign all those guys to four-year deals. Stallberg is on a four-year deal for $3 million a year. Nystrom's on a four-year deal for $2.5 million a year. And then you get rid of Hendricks. So I always find it interesting when you sign a guy to a long-term deal, as, and then you bail on it right away. Cause it's interesting to me. But they also have a short-term need because of Rene's injury.
Matt Hendricks is in the midst of a four-year, $7.4 million contract. So he's got three more years left on it after this season at a salary cap hit of $1.85 million per year.
Right, and you know, Devin Dubnyk, Richie touched on it. He had to say that his year went poorly would be a huge understatement. He really struggled this year, and well, I guess half of the year, but he really hasn't emerged into a number one goaltender and is probably more suited to a backup role. And that's why, as you mentioned, Drew, off the top of the segment, that's why they went out and they acquired Ilya Brizgalov. And now he goes to Nashville, where Rene has had those injury problems. And so he has an opportunity to possibly establish himself as a backup goaltender there because he's under contract. And Matt Hendricks is a guy, because he's under contract for three more years after this year, can possibly be a guy that kind of insulates the younger guys as far as being a depth player. He's not going to be on the top two lines. He'll most likely spend most of his time on the third and fourth line. So, you know, as far as Devin Dubnyk goes, he's, by all accounts, a really good guy, and you see him interviewed, and you know he's a good Canadian kid that just hasn't really performed at the NHL level. And he was given all of the opportunities to perform, and he can't take all of the blame because the Edmonton Oilers basically have cleaned the slate multiple times and brought in defensemen that just can't play at the NHL level. Anton Belov was brought in from the KHL, highly touted guy, and he just can't play defense. So the defensive system there, not the system, the defensive group that they have there needs to be addressed, and that's something that I imagine they will address moving forward before the trade deadline, because you want to talk about it later, but they've got guys that they can move, whether it's Hemsky or others, and you have to think that they're going to want a defenseman coming back if they can.
You can look at it quickly before break, Drew. You can look at all the stats and all that stuff, and there's certainly been flashes of good performance. Remember that he was drafted in 2004. So, I mean, you know, it's 10 years ago now, just almost 10 years that he was drafted. And if and he hasn't done it yet, and you're waiting. Okay, how much longer are you waiting now?
A leopard spots are permanent at some point in time, is what you're saying?
Well, who knows? I mean, Steve Mason goes over to Philly, looks great. And so you don't know with goalies. That's always the risky part. But in Edmonton, doesn't seem to have worked out at this point.
We will talk more about the Oilers' goaltending situation, including the corresponding move they made in relation to the Dubnyk trade. When we come back, David Ebner from the Globe and Mail is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go, Wednesday evening here on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline. Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek from the Globe and Mail. He's based out of Vancouver, David Ebner. David, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty well. And likewise, thanks for having me.
David, we brought you on to talk about your latest article. It was in Tuesday's Globe and Mail, if I'm not mistaken. It was also available online, and we'll send it out on our Twitter feed right now. It's a sports science related article about a product called the Zephyr Bioharness. Can you give some information on the product and what's so interesting about it?
Yeah, I'll just start with how I first saw it. It's basically a heart rate monitor that is worn around the midsection, just right under the chest and above the abs, basically. It's about a watch strap in length, and it's a black band. So obviously there's the locker room or whatever. There's no nakedness these days, as it were. But you can obviously see the guys taking off their gear. And the Vancouver Canucks preseason and then through the season until recently were wearing these black bands. And I was intrigued. Hockey Night mentioned it fractionally, but they didn't have any information on it because the Canucks weren't forthcoming. So, of course, I was even more intrigued. So I looked to track down the CEO of the company, which took a little doing. He was busy running his company. But tracked him down and tracked a few other people, like the former coach of the University of Southern California women's soccer team who used the bands, the trainer for the America Cup sailing team, Oracle, that won. He used the bands for the sailors as they trained for the race that they ended up coming from behind to win. And had a little chat with the Canucks. And then the one forthcoming team in the NHL was the Winnipeg Jets, and had a good chat with Lee Stubbs, who works as a trainer with the team. And all in, whoever is using it for whatever athletic endeavor, you can directly check heart rate and other physical factors while the players are in action. Of course, anyone could have done this before, like with a treadmill and a VO2 max setup. But the neat thing is you can, again, right in practice or right in the game, know what's going on with your players. And what that information can tell you, basically, is if you're pushing them too hard. And for a lot of people, the number one use of this technology, from the people experimenting very early or the people much more experienced with it, is injury prevention. So basically, even us schlubs know when you're tired, you're much more likely to step on your ankle or even worse, like blow your ACL, right? So how do you know if your players are tired? Coaches like to push players. The NFL has this incredible ethos of driving men way too far, really. And then, of course, that's all through pro sports, and no one wants to lose their job. But with this bioharness and this data, you're able to know for sure. Yeah, the trainer can say, like Lee at the Jets can say to, well, not Claude anymore, to Paul, that, hey, the guys are a little tired. They actually need rest, and I have the proof here. And there's some tangible evidence with the Jets, actually, because I mean, one thing about injuries prevented, you can't really measure it. You can't say, oh, there were 10 injuries prevented. But what you can look at is where do the Jets stand in terms of injuries. And it's, in fact, in the bottom half of the NHL, by which I mean the good half, fewer than more injuries in terms of players lost and the type of player lost, right? Like losing Kane would be a big loss, and losing, let's say, a $500,000 player is different. Anyway, the Jets are on the right side of the ledger when it comes to injuries. So can we say it is because of the bioharnesses? Not 100%, but I have to think it helped. And Lee, again, at the Jets, is quite pleased with it.
You know, David, are you envisioning the use of these devices for maybe an assistant coach up in the press box, and he can read how a player is performing, and then mic down to the other assistant coach and say, you know, that line's tired. That line needs to have a break this upcoming rotation, something like that?
I think there can be a lot of exciting things going on with this. There's no rule precisely in terms of player monitoring in hockey on the ice, because I guess this stuff is quite new, and of course no one's going to have a rule written about this 10 years ago. In soccer, actually, it's not allowed. No FIFA International or like MLS. No on-field monitoring. And I mean, this sort of monitoring goes on in like Tour de France and a lot of different endurance sports. It's not new. Hockey is a little behind basically the entire sporting world. But regardless, right now you can actually wear it during games. And yeah, what the scenario you described can exactly happen right now if a team like the Jets wanted to employ it that way. Brian Russell, the CEO of the company, it's based near Washington, D.C., and they first sold it to the military and then to NASA, and he's a Kiwi engineer, actually, who used to work in the cell phone business. There's obviously a remote delivery of the information here. And he got quite excited because in hockey, obviously, it's 45, 50-second shifts, so they're going hardcore so short, these bursts, right? And so the energy levels are bouncing up and down. You're basically driving your players to their edge every couple minutes, right, when they get on for their shift. And then Brian was quite excited because he was like, well, maybe on TV they could display the energy levels like it was a video game practically, right? I'm not sure that's going to happen any day soon. But that's just another example of how it could be used and exactly how the team itself without revealing the information, could use it. They could know that Kane is particularly tired today, or here in Vancouver's case, that Ryan Kesler, who's carrying a ton of minutes compared with last year, Tortorella is driving Kesler and the Sedins and Danheim is quite hard and keep saying, oh yeah, they're fine. In theory, the Canucks actually know technically for sure whether that's true or not. Mm-hmm. But of course, they're not telling us, so we'll have to guess.
David, you mentioned some of the teams that are using the Zephyr bioharness, Chicago Blackhawks, the Canucks, Penguins, Kings, the Jets have had some success with it, and you mentioned Lee Stubbs was interviewed for your article. Have there been varying degrees of success with this? Are certain teams having more success with this, and are there individual examples of players that have really benefited from the use of this?
Yeah, I'll just step back in two ways very briefly and say, I kind of jokingly wrote, not jokingly, but jokingly wrote in the article, as in Fight Club, the first rule of seeking an advantage in the NHL or in any league is to not talk about it.
Right, of course.
In terms of my references to Chicago, LA, and Pittsburgh, those teams, as far as I'm aware, are not using the bioharness specifically. They're doing all sorts of things, from advanced statistics to treating their players really well to thinking about fatigue and rest management, et cetera, et cetera. But specifically in the NHL, from the CEO, he turned me on to, I asked, well, I obviously knew the Canucks used it. And I said, is anyone else in the league using it? And it's the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens. So in hockey, all three of those teams, they're all new to the technology this year, and they're all in varying degrees of kind of testing it, seeing how it can work for them. I think the Jets are the furthest ahead, actually. The Canadiens used it in training camp, preseason games, kind of set it aside thereafter, basically. The Canucks basically were using it right through, if I'm right, something like December, and then they disappeared. And one of the Canuck trainer guys types said they're basically looking at the data right now and seeing where to move with it. And back with the Jets, quite a few of the guys are wearing it every game. And they had it through they use it at the development camp last summer. And so they're basically fully employing it. And I'm no Jets expert, so I have to apologize on that front. So, but yeah, the Jets have the data, and in theory, can utilize what's valuable with the technology. And again, I don't want to draw a 100% correlation, but I think the fact that the Jets are in the better half of the NHL in terms of injuries and not losing players is due in part, at least, to this investment in the technology.
It's funny, David, because I, you know, Claude Noel probably checked the heart monitors, didn't see anything over his last week of coaching.
No, that's one thing, actually. It makes me think of the University of Southern California. The coach there helped me out a lot, or the former coach now. He won a championship with the team his first year in 07, but it went a little backwards on him the last couple of seasons. He got jacked, unlike your man there. But, yeah, he was dealing with young women, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds from basically the greater Los Angeles area. And if you think some of the Jets are fickle, you imagine some of the athletes, the varying degrees of effort some of those athletes delivered. And that's what data can help you with, right? You can go to an athlete, maybe the athlete doesn't like the coach very much, but then the coach, it's not the coach's opinion anymore. And they say, well, hey, you're clearly dogging it. Or alternately, the coach can give a fellow or a young woman the day off when they've driven themselves super hard in a game or something like that. And then going back to Lee, assistant athletic trainer isn't the most prestigious position in any sport. And going up to Claude or Paul now, right, saying, hey, I've got about three declarations I'm going to make, and one of them involves given Kane a day off, and Paul's like, yeah, no. But then Lee can say, oh, no, actually, I have a proof, basically, right? Of course, the coach can still say no, but the data doesn't lie, as a number of people said.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by David Ebner of the Globe and Mail talking about the research he's done into a product called the Zephyr Bioharness, which monitors heart rate and an array of other fitness indicators, and it's being used by some NHL teams, most predominantly and most publicly by your Winnipeg Jets.
Final question for you here, David, and we appreciate you giving your time tonight. cost. You know, a lot of this technology, it's an investment from the team, and obviously the teams, you know, there's a lot of money invested in these organizations. But how much does something like this cost, and what's this company looking like in terms of, you know, should I be investing in them?
You need an in right now because they're still privately held, so not a public stock. So there's no, it's not not quite Twitter accessible type thing yet. But I think the company itself is faring quite well. They've slow but sure. They're hitting a wave now. They gathered some $20 million or so in private financing, including from 3M and Motorola. They're making a big push in healthcare this year with remote monitoring of patients. So basically, hospital patients who are discharged but should probably still be kind of kept an eye on. And how do you do that exactly?
And, interesting.
And so a remote monitoring in that sense. And there's obviously competition. There's other companies. One's called Polar. They've been doing it. And I presume there's other technologies. In terms of the specific cost of the Zephyr, you know, I don't have the exact number, but it's definitely in the tens of thousands of dollars. Whether it for to outfit the entire jets and run it for a year, is that more than 100,000? I'm not sure, but it's definitely, it costs money. And then Lee said, it's just like any business. A business chooses what it's going to invest in. But obviously, I keep going back to Kane. But like, what's his salary? It's $5 million a year for the next whatever years,
it's over
right?
$5 million,
And so, what's $100,000 on $5 million? So that's how I see it, right? And obviously, the Jets and the Globe Mail actually share an owner with David Thompson, who's the richest man in Canada. What's $100,000? And I don't want to be so pithy about it because what's $100,000 to me? Well, it's more than my salary. But but like, if you're going to invest millions of dollars in all these players, right? If you can save one from being injured for 10 games or a year or whatever, right? I'm spending that money,
sense,
right?
Yeah.
I'm spending that money. So I think it'll catch on quickly now. Every league is copycat league, right? So once a good idea pops around, like it seems to be quite prevalent in the NBA and a little bit at least in football and other sports like actually F1 racing. So I think things like this will become quite commonplace, and just like the iPhone or, well, I actually still have a BlackBerry, but just like these phones, I have one of the new ones. Actually, it's not too bad. Granted, it was free, so. these phones that we hold in our hand and that we have the internet and incredible speed on it and we can watch YouTube and on it and stuff like that, that is all the basis of this technology, a lot of this technology and the cameras that they're using in the NBA to track everyone and look at this, that, and the other. I think we're basically, with mobile technology and how it's advanced so far, the next 5 years, you're going to see this is all going to become very, very commonplace, I think.
And in this day and age, in the salary cap, where each team is limited to what they can spend, there's no salary cap on research and development that a deep-pocketed team could spend more than one of the weak sisters in the NHL.
And that's exactly it. And so the Jets are on the better side of the ledger. They're selling out every game, obviously. But obviously, the owners are guys that have a little cash. And Vancouver, same situation, billionaire owners. It's basically the same across Canada, in terms of heavyweight owners and basically a relatively wealthy franchise, regardless of the actual ownership. And so, yeah, that's where you can seek an edge. And that sort of edge can be sought in so many ways. And if it's kind of crazy to think, like 10 years ago, the players were still making tons of money, but they weren't really treated like millionaires, you know? And so that's all changing now. And what difference does it make at the end? It's an inch, it's a couple inches or whatever. But so often, that's how things get settled. You know, if 2 points in the standing, a couple shootout losses, you're in ninth instead of eighth, and then your season's ruined, basically.
Absolutely. David Ebner from the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us to talk about this fascinating article. We'll send it out on our Twitter feed once again. Thanks again, David.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciate the time.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Shortly past 7:20 in the evening here, Wednesday evening, a beautiful Wednesday evening. What weird weather today.
Yeah, just storm, nice, cold in the morning, snow, it's crazy.
Yeah, I got home and very briefly and took the dog out for a walk, and I bundled up expecting it to be, you know, blustery, and I'm like, hey, it's like spring here.
Oh, so you were that guy walking down Osborne without a shirt on.
Yeah, that was me. I thought it was, you know.
Yeah, it was weird.
Beach weather.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of beach weather. Anyways, big thank you to David Ebner of the Globe and Mail for having just joined us. Really interesting stuff. And I really like sort of, I mean, those are the advantages, as I said at the end of the interview, those are the advantages that the deep-pocketed, the wealthy teams can spend. You know, they can go out and they can spend, you know, $100,000 or $150,000, whatever it costs, I don't know, and say, okay, you know, and really get information. And I mean, information is the key to everything. That's why the Canucks, you know, how many years now have the Canucks been employing that sleep doctor, you know, especially with all their travel that they do? It's those sort of smaller advantages that go under the radar, and that's one of them. So really interesting article, check it out.
How does that, like, sleep doctor work? Like, I know how it works, but, you know, when the boys want to go for a night on the town and they're not getting as much sleep as they're supposed to, does that get reported back to management? Like, how does that work?
I'm not 100% sure. I've been to a witch doctor, but I have never been to a sleep doctor, so I don't know about that. But you know, again, it's teams investing in every little edge known possible. And David made the right point. You know, if you're paying a guy, you're paying Evander Kane $5 million a year, or just over $5 million a year, is it worth it to spend $10,000 to make sure that you know everything about him and you can keep him as healthy as possible? And certainly is in my estimation. But and obviously, Jets management feels the same way. They've invested in the they've purchased the product by all accounts.
Right, and you mentioned that it might be for only the wealthy teams, but if it's effective,
and you
can say that a certain player is playing too much. And we've talked about it on this show. If Dustin Byfuglien, because of his fitness level, is playing too much, you have the data. And sports is a science.
Sure.
Especially when you're talking about having a salary cap of $64 to $70 million. So I think we're past the point, you know, and David Ebner mentioned it. We don't know which exact Jets are using this. It could be all of them. It could be just a handful. But he did mention that certain Jets in games are wearing these things. And if Buff is one of them, which probably he isn't if he was playing that much before. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not taking a shot at Buff, but I mean, you know, if they can use data to prove their point, then you can't really argue with that, right? I mean, there is a reason why, you know, their data exists and they have made this investment. So you might see all 30 teams using it within the next year or two.
Would not surprise me at all. Let's talk about the second half of the moves that the Edmonton Oilers made earlier today. The first part was trading Devan Dubnyk to the Nashville Predators. They acquired Matt Hendricks in exchange for Dubnyk. Then they, simultaneous to that move, they traded a third-round draft pick to the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for Ben Scrivens. Ben Scrivens, of course, was the goalie that the Kings acquired from the Maple Leafs in the Jonathan Bernier trade this past offseason. He's an unrestricted free agent after this year. Worth noting, though, that he is from Spruce Grove, Alberta, which is just a suburb of Edmonton, so there certainly is a lot of, there's a lot of probably attractiveness to the Oilers market to Ben Scrivens. You know, is Ben Scrivens the answer, or is this sort of, you know, a move where you test him out for 35 games and then maybe you bring him in sort of as a 1A, 1B situation and you bring somebody else in the offseason?
Before we start talking about Ben Scrivens, what was this business about his girlfriend or something not liking the cold weather?
His girlfriend or wife, I'm not sure. She's from Los Angeles. So that was her hometown, so obviously she never said anything bad about that. I don't know. I mean, she just tweeted that, you know, sad to be leaving her hometown, Los Angeles, but excited to be going to Edmonton, which is Ben Scriven's hometown.
Girlfriend or wife? Big difference.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know.
Your husband is getting an opportunity with another team, so we won't get into that. But, you know, you mentioned Drew, or you asked the question, is he the answer? I don't think we're expecting Ben Scrivens to be the number one goalie. I have to say, though, Ben Scrivens has done a really good job in L.A. He's put up his best NHL numbers, and up until this point, Richie, he's only been an AHL goalie. He's been very successful at the AHL level with the Marlies. He went on that playoff run, the Calder Cup run with the Marlies. But at this point, you know, he's a backup. So as far as the Oilers go, they've got Brizgalov and they've got Scrivens now. So I think, As far as the future goes, Brizgalov's only on a 1 year contract.
Yeah.
Scrivens has only got 1 year left, or half of a year at this point. So I think they're pretty much determining who's going to win the backup role, because I think we all expect the Oilers to most likely acquire another goaltender either before the trade deadline, after the trade deadline, in the offseason. So I don't think they made this move I think they've realized that Devin Dubnyk isn't the goalie, and they've realized that they have to bring someone else in. Because right now they don't have a guy. They traded LaBarbera, Richie.
So oh, he's terrible.
Well, he's a backup guy as well. Chicago acquired him because...
Did you watch a documentary in the summer about like signing all those guys? They got so excited about signing all these guys who you know, probably shouldn't have made the team.
Well, as far as the Oilers go, they really potentially missed out on a top guy. But when you're talking about LaBarbera, you're talking about a guy who has, to this point, been a career AHL goalie backup.
Yeah.
He's never proven that he can be a number one goalie. Right. And again, it's nothing against him. I mean, he just isn't a number one goalie. He's better suited for a backup role, even the AHL. So they haven't addressed that. The goaltending, we've talked about it quite a bit on this show, has been awful on certain teams, and you just can't have that. You know, Devin Dubnyk, for all that he's done in the past and all of the potential that he still might have at 27 years old, he just doesn't give them reliable enough goaltending to win hockey games in the NHL,
yeah.
And that's ultimately why they traded him, and why Nashville acquiring him probably means that they're going to want to see, can he be a backup for us for the duration of his contract?
From LA's perspective, Martin Jones obviously is playing really well, and Scrivens being a pending UFA, as you guys mentioned, makes him expendable.
Sure,
Scrivens has played well in Los Angeles. I think Billy Ranford there is a factor. I think, to be honest, the fact that they have a tremendously strong defensive squad is a great factor. He's been a guy, as he mentioned, who succeeded at the AHL level and has had some success in his short periods of time in the NHL. I mean, he's only played 51 games in the National Hockey League. How do you really judge that? He's a bigger guy, you know, taller. He's a taller guy. He's 27 years old also, obviously, as you mentioned as well, from Spruce Grove, Alberta. So...
Let me jump in.
And Dallas Aikens coached him for the Toronto Marlies. So you have a lot of connections. But do they acquire him expecting him to be the answer? Absolutely not. I think they acquire him hoping that he could lightning, you know, you can catch lightning in a bottle and he can be the answer. But more likely, you want him to be the backup next year if you can sign him. And I think you're looking at the Oilers going out and splurging on a netminder. It's about time. They have to do it. They can't get by with this goaltending anymore. It's not good enough. So I think... you'll likely see them probably make a run at Jonas Hiller and maybe some other guys who become available or based on free agency or via trade. But I see them probably taking that free agent route. The guys are trading today are fine. You know, they're trading some draft picks. They got a lot of young players, a lot of young talent. But most of all, they're moving parts in and out, and they're trying to get, I think, a little bit better on the bottom six. And Hendricks fits into the speed element and the aggressiveness and ability to play the middle. This is not going to be these moves today aren't making this team a Stanley Cup contender, and I think we all know that.
Do you have a problem with them spending a third round pick on a guy that, you know, they could get for free 30 games from now?
You get a better read on what you're getting for this period of time. A third round pick isn't nothing, but it's just before kind of the nothing thing, so the nothing area, you know, the fifth round and such. So the Oilers also have a lot of guys in the system, and I think if they can get a lead on a guy who's from Alberta and they like him and he can solidify at least their backup goal. I mean, we're talking about a team that needs backup goaltending as much as it needs starting goaltending. Ilya Brizgalov's playing guys. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, the way their goaltending situation has gone down, and I realize Dubnyk had some success, but you can't get by like that anymore. So I don't mind them moving some parts around. I don't mind Matt Hendricks. His cap, it's never going to kill you at that low of a number, below $2 million. So overall, I'm fine with their moves, but again, they're not racing to the streets to celebrate.
And I think all indications are that they're going to get a draft pick when they trade Alex Hemsky too, so they'll probably get that draft pick back. I don't think Alex Hemsky is going to get what he commanded a few years ago. If you read what some of the writers are saying in Edmonton, they're saying that that's probably what you're looking at. If you get a second round pick for Hemsky at this point in his career, you'll probably take it because he's a UFA. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get that draft pick back. So I don't have a problem with it, and I think that, you know, Ryan Rashog was on Hustler and Lawless right before. We've had him on this show before, and he was talking about it. Craig McTavish has tons of moves to make before the trade deadline in the offseason, because I don't think anybody expected it to be this bad. I certainly didn't. I didn't pick the Oilers to make the playoffs, but I didn't think it was going to be this bad. The Oilers have really struggled defensively, not unlike the Jets, because you have so much talent there. You have so many first overall picks. Andrew Ferentz has come in there, and he's done the best job that he can, but you have so many disappointments 19 defensemen on that team. Nobody's really stepped up. They don't have a number one, let alone a number one. They don't really have a number two or three defenseman there. So I think you're going to see a lot more moves. You know, we're going to talk about that later with the Buffalo Sabres, but I think the Oilers are most arguably going to be the most active team before the trade deadline.
Well, he mismanaged Alshemsky, the whole management team, because there's been gentlemen, you know, Steve Tambellini and him, they've mismanaged this Hemsky thing for years now.
Yeah.
They knew they were going to be a bad team.
He's been a lame duck, Richie, for so long.
They mismanaged it to a point where they signed him to a two-year deal because they had to at that point. Now they're basically back where they were before. And he's older and more fragile than he already was. It was mismanaged. This team has been mismanaged.
It's mismanaged because he's a guy, I don't know if at this point in his career he's a top six, but I don't think you can use him in another role. On a good team, he's probably a third-line forward. But on this team, they don't really have a use for him, and it's clear that he's not part of that core, right? Like, the core of the team is Hall, Nugent Hopkins, Justin Schultz, maybe Yakupov, most likely Eberle. Unless one of these guys get moved, they might move Sam Gagner. But Alshemsky doesn't really fit in as kind of the five-year plan, 10-year plan going forward. So you're right, they did mismanage him.
And you said you didn't have the Oilers making the playoffs, and my predictions are always terrible, but I had them because I thought they were going to be like Colorado was. You know, all this young talent up front, be able to put it together. There's one of these teams usually surprises you, and whoever knows which one it's going to be.
I don't think I don't think anybody expected that defense to be that bad. I mean, it's arguably the worst defense in the NHL right now, with maybe the exception of Buffalo. But it's got all sorts of problems.
For sure.
And as I mentioned, you can listen to the Ryan Rashog interview. He was talking about it. He follows that team more than anybody, if you don't trust my opinion.
but look at Colorado. Look at their defense and tell me how – I know Eric Johnson, of course, better than those guys on Colorado. And, you know, a guy like Hayda is underrated in certain aspects of his game and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of those guys and Ryan Wilson and
– Tyson Berry's
and Tyson good. Berry and Corey Sarri. I mean, come on. You're going to tell me – On paper it's that much better. Obviously, goaltending is a factor there. Colorado versus Edmonton in terms of performance this year, and the forwards have been good in Colorado, the young guys. But some of the young guys have been really good in Edmonton too. You have to also look to behind the bench. And Dallas Eakins, you know, sold a bill of goods to a lot of the fans, and so far, you know, including me, I thought he'd do a far better job. He hasn't done a great job, and we're in the results. They're in a results driven business, and for all that he says in the media, the results haven't yet been there. And Patrick Waugh, who talkative as well, but I think less so in boasting, you know, his ideas as much as motivating, and he's been far more successful. Again, we're only 50 games into the season, but the Colorado is well on the way to a playoff, and they beat Chicago last night, I believe.
Ralph Kruger for the job at Edmonton again. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
.37 in the evening here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and producer Michael Remus joining you for NHL Midweek on this Wednesday. Reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, bright and early, 7 a.m. start time on this fine station. We're old pros at that by now, though. We don't even blink at our eyes at 7 a.m. It's 6 a.m. that we sort of have to keep an eye on, but 7 a.m. with our eyes closed, we can get up for that. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com, updated by our colleague Dave Manouk multiple times per day. Gentlemen, we're getting into the time of the year now that we're past the new year. We're in the middle of January, where teams are beginning, the trade rumors are sort of picking up. And there's always trade rumors because, you know, that's part of the fun of being a fan in sports is, you know. But I think there's a little more credence to some of these rumors now as teams fall out of the playoff races and you look at unrestricted free agents and who might be able to help a playoff contender. And the Winnipeg Jets have a couple of those players, and we'll talk about them throughout the course of the next coming weeks and probably month or so. I want to go sort of do a whip around the entire NHL and look at some of the teams that may be making news regarding trades. Team I want to start with is the Anaheim Ducks, and they're not going to be making any news regarding a trade. They have a glut of goaltenders, and they have one goaltender who's going to be an unrestricted free agent. We talked about him last segment. That's Jonas Hiller. Earlier this week, Bob Murray, Anaheim Ducks general manager, put a kibosh on the thought that the Ducks were going to deal Jonas Hiller telling ESPN.com the following. There's not a chance in hell that I'm moving Jonas Hiller. I'm tired of hearing about the rumors. I can tell you Jonas is not going anywhere. You know, is Jonas Hiller not going anywhere because the Ducks are just so close to a Stanley Cup team that it, even if you lose him in the offseason for nothing, it's still, you know, it's still better to hold on to him and keep that cup dream alive for the rest of the season?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. And I think that they're talking about it on TSN during the break of this Toronto-Buffalo game. But as far as Jonas Hiller goes, that's your most proven NHL goalie, right? So where the Anaheim Ducks are at right now, they've lost one game in the last 2 months or something. So things are going pretty well. I don't have the answer to that. Should they trade him? Would I trade him? Probably not. I mean, you look at the other guys in the system, yeah, they have a lot in the system, but he's your established goalie. Uh-huh. So I think, you know, we're on this rumor mill again, Richie, and we were on this rumor mill. We've been on this rumor mill many times. You know, we mentioned Alex Hemsky. I think there's a good chance he doesn't get traded, but again, with what's happening right now with that goaltending situation, you don't have two good goalies, you don't have three good goalies, you have four good goalies. John Gibson maybe is a guy that you would say is maybe the one that they won't trade, but again, right, maybe they decide that they want to trade him. What are the Ducks going to do before the trade deadline? They don't have to do much to their team, except you look at their defense. Maybe you want to add a depth defenseman, so maybe they part with a goaltender. You sell from a position of strength to address a position of weakness. So again, I don't know the answer to that. To me, it seems like he would be part of this Stanley Cup run, because this team is built for a nice long Stanley Cup run here.
You have to balance, and goaltenders are different than forwards, defensemen in terms of UFA. You have to balance your team, you know, your team's chances, as you guys have mentioned, versus the free agent aspect. And for sure, Anderson, Fast, and Gibson, all these guys being options down the road, play a factor in a Jonas Hiller long-term deal, even a short-term deal. But when your team's rolling like the Anaheim Ducks are, you cannot get rid of the starting netminder who's been getting you through the season. You can't do that. The team, you cannot jeopardize the possibility of going on a deep playoff run to maybe reposition yourself down the road for a little bit more cap leverage or some compensation, whatever it may be.
I agree.
You just can't do it. And Bob Murray knows what he's doing. Quietly goes about his business there, has done a real nice job, kind of the quote-unquote rebuilding on the fly. The team looks great. They play like a team. Their best players have been their best players. They're underrated players, you know, like Cogliano. We've talked about him a lot because of the Frolik comparison in terms of the contracts and similar styles in some ways, not a ton. You know, Daniel Winnick.
It's a similar statistical performance.
Saku Koivu. I mean, nobody talks about Saku Koivu, but boy, that guy is a nice player. And, you know, he's not what he once was in Montreal, but he does a great job at doing what he needs to do in Anaheim. You know, Slaney isn't what he once was, sure, but they have a bunch of guys. Ezzy's talked about Palmieri, who he likes. You have guys like Bolesky. So you can't throw that all off. So I think Hiller, that decision is absolutely the correct one.
Moving to the team that we're watching on the NHL on TSN, that's the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. A lot of chatter about Nazem Kadri mm-hmm. being on the trade market.
I think it's a bit ridiculous.
Well, I mean,
Again, Richie, Kadri was a point-a-game player last year, and he put his time in the AHL. He's still very young, 21 now, 22, still very young. And
same draft as Kane.
And you're looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and all this Kadri talk, and I know Toronto, the epicenter of the hockey world, and they'd like to think they're New York North, but, you know...
got the claws out already.
That's why Wright is a Winnipegger coming from little Winnipeg, right?
Yeah.
So as far as Kadri goes, he struggled. And when Tyler Bozak went out, he was asked to be the first-line center, and he struggled with that. He's not ready to be a first-line center. He struggles with those defensive responsibilities and the face-off responsibilities and all that. But similar to the Edmonton Oilers, we look at the glaring problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's on defense. And we had Jonas Siegel on the Saturday show talking about that. And, I mean, they desperately need one, two, maybe even three defensemen there, a change there. Paul Ranger's come back. back, and he struggled. Mark Fraser, a bunch of different guys have struggled.
Fraser's like, really struggled.
Yeah. And even Franzen has taken a step back, even though he's probably their second or third best defenseman after Phaneuf and Gunnarsson. But that's what you have to address. So if you're going to trade Kadri, a guy that has tons of potential there, you better be getting a defenseman that can play in your top four there, because that is, to me, what the problem with this team is. Kadri struggled, sure, but you don't want to give up on him because he's had a bad little stretch here. I think Kadri can be a big part of the Leafs' future.
There's rumors about Kadri partly because of maybe the relationship with Randy Carlyle, and some say that's not a great relationship, and sure, Carlyle has some iffy relationships with some of his players. But the Leafs aren't selling Kadri unless they get a player of similar style back, whether it be on offense, but maybe, as he mentions, on defense. I mean, that might be something they want to look at in terms of trading a young forward for a young defenseman if it means a young defenseman they can have for the next 10 years. Kadri had a great year last year and a Lalko shortened year. He produced a lot of offense. You know, he can do too much with the puck at times, and his attitude can rub some people the wrong way, and he's not the biggest guy, not the most physical guy. There are certain aspects to his game, and he's polarizing for that reason. I wouldn't be absolutely shocked if he got traded, but I would be surprised. And, you know, we talk about trades. In the salary cap worlds of the National Football League, the National Basketball Association, and the National Hockey League, you very rarely see a lot of trades, right? And so, especially with every team up against the cap, there's a little room to move. So, unless Kadri can get a return of a top four defenseman, with probably top two potential, and who's trading those? I just don't know if that happens.
Richie, I agree with you, and I think, you know, I'm going to make a bit of a bold prediction, because a couple of years ago, I remember, I predicted a lot of trades, and you guys predicted few trades, and maybe you guys will disagree again. I don't think there are going to be a lot of trades before the trade deadline, and I think 2 years ago, that was a different time, and I think you look at the UFA class. The UFA class is a lot better than it was last year, and I think, you know, Richie touched on it in the salary cap era, where Edmonton's in a situation where they have to eat half of Dubnyk's salary, and Dubnyk's not making the league minimum. I mean, he was signed, I think it was $3 million around there.
Yeah.
I
got it right here.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, they had to eat up the salary so they could move him, get Hendricks, and then acquire Scrivens for the draft pick. So it is difficult to make trades, and, you know, if you want to compare that to the Winnipeg Jets, you haven't seen Chevy make a move this year, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, the difficulty in making trades. You have the salary cap going up to $70 million, Richie.
You know, that'll make it. You'll make you see more trades.
Doesn't mean that you can't make trades.
This summer you'll see more trades.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that the summer is going to be more active. I remember a couple years ago, we had the trade deadline where there was, 20-25 trades, and then the free agent market, with the exception of Suter and Parise, that year I'm talking about, there weren't a lot of big names moving. But this year I think you're going to see the opposite. I think you're going to see fewer trades. And again, I think this is a function of, you have Toronto, who has started off the season really well, and now they're struggling, and Kadri's kind of an easy target, where he's one of those guys that has underperformed, but that doesn't mean that you give up on him just because he's had a bad stretch. And I know Richie mentioned, you know, some of the issues he's had, and he definitely has some maturing to do. But I don't think, as Richie mentioned, they're desperately trying to get rid of him. I think they're probably listening to some trades, but I don't think they're desperately trying to get rid of him.
Why wouldn't they listen on everybody? I mean, you talked about the UFA market as this summer. Gabrick, Heatley.
Yep.
Heatley's terrible, but Gabrick, Heatley, and all these guys. Vanek, Thornton, Marlowe, Boyle. Yeah.
Matt Molson just scored for Buffalo. He's a UFA.
Yep. Ryan Miller, Tiemannin, Camilleri, Ginla, Marco. That's all off the list of cap geeks, you know, pending UFAs based on who makes the most money. The key there is all those names you will know, and all those players do not play, or most of them do not play up to the levels they did when they established themselves. So you're getting, because these second contracts, you're getting a lot older UFAs now. That the good ones at 25 are very rare that it happens, like the Parises at a young age, or fairly young age, that they're available. So the UFA means it's going to be more of a veteran presence, and you might see the teams will still go crazy for guys like Clarkson because there's so much money to spend. Only so much money you can spend on the cap teams, but the trades are just so rare. And when you hear all the trade rumors all the time throughout the year now, it's hard to take them seriously. It really is.
Well, Richie, with Kadri too, so sorry to cut you off, but with Kadri too, isn't there a debate amongst GMs what his ceiling is? I mean, he's still young.
He's tradable, though, because one GM might think he's way better than another.
Right. I guess you could look at it both ways, but I would say that, you know, I might argue that he was a second-round center, potential second line center, pardon me, because he's playing that role right now. But you could say, well, maybe he's playing a role too high. Like maybe on Anaheim, he's a third line center. Maybe on another team, he's a third line center. So that maybe makes it more difficult. But, you know, as you say, Richie, maybe it makes it more easy if a guy is willing to label him a second line center and then give up an asset on coming back.
Like there are certain guys who should move and eventually will move, but we hear a ton of rumors all the time. And, you know, there's only
the guys who are going to move at the trade deadline for the most part, the guys who are UFAs, they're veterans, and their teams aren't going to go anywhere.
Well, it took 3 years for us to finally put the Luongo trade rumors to bed. I mean, or maybe it was 4 years.
But the other thing is this. We all hear about the cap. That's true, but also a ton of these GMs are risk-averse and won't put their name on the line for a big one-for-one deal. You very rarely see that as well.
Because that can define your tenure, right?
That's right. And if they don't do anything, they're less likely to be criticized than if they do something and they fail.
Right. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
As usual, Bruce Springsteen ends both the Wednesday show and the Saturday show. It's the new album out tonight in stores. Richie, you already bought it, right?
Yeah, I pre-bought it. I guess I got it yesterday. Like at midnight, it shot to my phone.
Available in, on iTunes and Amazon.
Yeah.
This is the Ghost of Tom Joad, new version of it.
Well, yeah, he came out with an album, but this is a re-recorded version with Tom Morello. Remus's Boy from Rage Against the Machine, The Night Watchman. What was the other? Audio Slave, yeah. I always mix up Audio Slave and Velvet Revolver.
I don't know about
concerts, by the way.
I don't know about Rage Against the Machine, but every Saturday, every Wednesday, I rage against the Mindell.
You're not the only one.
Controversy again among the Illegal Curve family.
I'm mad about this.
I mean, first of all, before we go any further, happy birthday, Rick Ralph.
Yes, he's 31.
21.
I thought it was 25, okay. So somewhere in between there.
Okay. Slick Rick.
Anyways, very happy birthday to Rick Ralph, and even though the controversy is tangentially related to his birthday, we don't hold any ill will towards him as a result. But, you know, Mr. Remus went to the trouble, very nice of gesture of him, to buy Rick a birthday gift.
They spend a lot
of time together.
What is it?
I got him a gift card to get his car washed.
Where? Oh, yes, can you not say?
We're not going to say where. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Was it like over $20?
Yeah.
Wow.
Remus, you for sure re-gifted that.
100%.
So, did you re-gift it?
Let's just qualify this, okay?
Yeah.
So, Michael Remus.
Car wash.
Who, you know, I've
Rick's got a nice car and needs to get it washed.
I've known Michael for, you know, since he was born.
Yeah.
Four years ago.
Good 25 years.
Literally, Richie took him from the hospital.
Yeah, literally. Well, my brother was born 2 days before this guy over here.
He's not kidding.
And yeah, 2 days before Remus, you know, mom's in the hospital at the same time.
Yeah.
And knew each other even before that, Michael. So it's been a long time, even before you were born. And Drew asks Michael if he wants to go in on my birthday gift. Rick's not 35, 40, 45. He's in the middle of there.
Not a big birthday.
Yeah, not
is
a
what
big birthday.
Yeah.
My birthday was, you know, kind of significant. We won't talk about the number.
Well, we've talked about it on air before. Okay. It was Richard's 30th birthday.
And you asked Remus if he wanted to come in on the gift.
Yeah, I was putting together a group gift for Richard for his birthday.
And by the way, Remus told me this. That's why I know it. Nobody else told me.
Just for the record, I didn't come in on that gift because I got Richie a separate gift.
Yeah,
so
nice.
I Richie got a gift from me.
Yeah, he got a gift from me. He got a gift from me. He got a gift from Ezzy.
Okay, so hold on. So you asked Remus if he wanted to come in on the gift for me. And Remus said, I don't think I want to spend that much money.
That's true.
Yeah, how much more
was it than the gift you bought for Rick?
More than double.
I was told it was going to be
slightly more than double.
So your girlfriend got the gift.
Yeah.
And her name was on the card, but not yours.
Hashtag Leah.
We had just started going out at that point. Come on.
Well, you couldn't spring for another $15, eh?
It was more than that.
Another $15 over what you bought for Rick.
You know, it's one less burrito for Ian, you know, in a week.
God forbid you don't have a burrito and a Coke once in a while.
Look, Rick, his girlfriend got a gift for me. Me and Rick have birthdays in the same week.
Well, your girlfriend also got you a gift before your birthday, so now you know what to buy Rick and what to buy your girlfriend.
And next
I'm
year...
I'm talking about Rick's
same idea, though. You knew what to get him.
It's true.
You know, Remus, I don't know what you're talking about. For a week.
Rick got me a gift. I got him one.
Because you knew what he got you, so you knew what to spend.
No, no, regardless of that. It doesn't matter what you spend, it's the gesture. Yeah. He didn't even bother with the gesture to you. If he comes
nothing. Yeah.
If he comes with and gives you a bunch of Slurpee gift certificates, you say thank you very much and be happy with it. You don't have a problem with
Rebus
that.
Did Rebus even come out for your birthday? I don't think he was there. He even came out.
At your house? We played hockey. Yeah, I was at your house.
We went out after.
It was a three-course meal.
Did Rebus come out after, though? Yeah, he did. Actually, no, that's right.
I was out everywhere.
You should get RP again.
Okay, quickly, before break, before we go to commercial, the Jets keys tomorrow night.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty clear to me. You know, you talk about speed. You talk about all that stuff. Calgary cannot score, okay? So the Jets are going to want to keep it simple. And Paul Maurice has been stressing it. Keep the speed to the outside. Don't take too many risks with your defensemen and the turnovers. And if you score three goals, you're going to win tomorrow. It's not a hard game.
Right. Mike Camilleri is still out with a concussion. Yeah, so really, with the exception of maybe Yuri Hudler, Michael Backlund, a few guys, this is a game that the Jets should win on paper. So it'd be nice to get the new coach's second win in a row.
That's it for this edition of NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, David Ebner from the Globe and Mail, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. Saturday morning, 7 a.m., bright and early, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, right before begins game day coverage of the Jets and Oilers game later on that afternoon. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website is illegalcurve.com. For my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host Drew Mindell. If it's Wednesday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.